Tapes from the Dark Side contains descriptions of violence and sexuality. Listener discretion is advised.
Dylan had actually found some pictures, and his brother Corey found horrible pictures of their father, and this has been confirmed, of him dressed as a baby, diaper, bonnet, little pacifier, and eating his own feces. That is about as twisted as you can get.
I think everyone has a bit of a fascination with the dark side. I myself have always loved the dark side as well. I think it's something that everyone secretly longs for and wants.
You're his father. How could you do this to him?
Elaine, I don't know where Dylan is. I haven't had anything to do with this.
I know that's a lie.
Who was Dylan Redwine? A 5-foot-tall, 105-pound, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, 13-year-old boy. Now, before we really start to take a deep dive into this case, I'd like to quickly review the timeline up until the day that Dylan went missing. 8 years prior to Dylan going missing, all the way back in 2004, Elaine took a job at Fort Lewis College, and the Redwines packed up and moved their Denver home to Bayfield, about a 6-hour drive south. Dylan would have been 5 years old at the time. 3 years later, 2007, Mark and Elaine divorced. Elaine Redwine and the boys continued to live in Bayfield, and Mark moved into a house near Vallecito Reservoir, about a 25-minute drive north. They shared custody of their children during this time. Now, fast forward 5 years, and in the spring of 2012, on a beach vacation trip, Dylan found compromising sexual pictures of his father. A few months after the picture discovery, in July 2012, Elaine moved to Colorado Springs, which was about a 5.5-hour drive away. She brought Dylan, now 13, and Corey, now 21, with her. Then on September 21st, 2012, Elaine gained full custody of Dylan. Mark would be able to share certain holidays, the first being that Thanksgiving. In a closed-door meeting with the judge, Dylan explained that he had found pictures of his father eating feces and dressed as a baby, and that for this reason, he didn't want to go to his father's house for the Thanksgiving holiday unsupervised. The judge ordered this anyways. Then, nearly exactly 1 month later, Dylan Redwine disappeared, November 19th, 2012, and has yet to be heard from since.
There were some pictures of Mark that, can you tell us who found them and what they were, if you don't mind, or I can say it, and give us a little bit of background about that.
Well, when Dylan and Corey and Mark were on their vacation probably 2 years ago, Dylan was loading pictures from their trip while they were still on their trip, and Dylan had found some pretty disturbing pictures of Mark. And quite honestly, it's pretty tough for me to talk about, because I never brought those pictures up, because, again, I'm not trying to slander Mark I'm just trying to find Dylan. But, you know, they were pictures of him dressed in women's clothing and wearing a diaper and you know.
Eating his feces.
Yes.
And now Dylan discovered these 2 years ago, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was 2 years ago, yes.
And did Corey see them as well?
Yes.
Let's just go through what you think Dylan was feeling. Was he feeling happy? Was he stressed out? Tell us about picking him up from the airport, what you did, what happened when you got home, and let's go from there. So you pick him up at the airport. Is he happy? Is he sullen? What's he doing?
I won't say that he's happy. I think that there was something on his mind, and in many ways he was a little more distant with me than he might otherwise be. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, and obviously I've had this conversation with law enforcement, and it was clear to me, and it's clear to a lot of people, that there was something going on with him, and I have no knowledge of what that is.
This is Mark's signature modus operandi when confronted with uncomfortable facts. He claims ignorance. In fact, any time the fetish pictures are brought up, Mark vehemently denies having anything to do with them. According to court documents in late 2013, two of Elaine's friends got in an argument with Mark in the area in front of his house. When these same pictures were referenced, Mark allegedly immediately reacted violently, quote, picking up a log, raising it over his head in an attack gesture, and approaching them, causing them to drive off, end quote.
How did they react? What did they do?
I think at first they were just, stunned. You know, disbelief. Yes, I mean, mm-hmm. I it was very difficult. And I think that over time, after they saw the pictures, you know, there is a very noticeable change in Mark. And there has been for the last couple of years. I think he's very detached. And I just think there have been so many changes. And I think the boys have seen it too. So at this point, I don't think much surprises Corey. And, you know, I think Dylan just kind of rolled with it and tried to make the best of it.
Okay, so you pick him up, and then you go to McDonald's first or Walmart?
No, we went directly to Walmart. Mm-hmm. You know, we got out of the truck. We talked about what we always talk about when we go to Walmart. He's going to go to the video section and check out the toys and music and that kind of thing. And I'm going to go do what I went there to do, which would be to gather the items that I had on a short list of things that we would need to tide us over for a few days while we got closer to figuring out what we were going to do for the Thanksgiving holiday.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you were figuring out what you were going to do, how was he responding to you? Was he sullen? What was the deal?
He was perfectly fine. I mean, he wasn't necessarily acting abnormal by any means. You know, when we walked in the door, he was ahead of me. Apparently, I have a tendency to walk slow. And, you know, he went off in the direction that he went off in, and I went off in the direction that I went in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what we always do. I mean, it's always like that. So that was nothing mm-hmm. that was out of the ordinary in my mind.
How could they see their father? Did they bring it up to Mark when these pictures were found? Did they say, "What the hell is this?" Or did they just try and ignore it?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I'm not mm-hmm. sure if Dylan... I know Dylan afterwards did bring it up to Mark, and it was just recently. Mm-hmm. But I don't know...
Let's back up, because this is important. Dylan just recently brought up to Mark about the pictures he discovered. Do you know when that was?
I think it was... When Dylan was visiting over Labor Day weekend in 2012,
okay.
before we had court, because we had court on the 21st of September.
And what makes you think that he brought that up?
Just because of him talking to Corey. Dylan didn't really talk to me about that, but he did talk to Corey about that. You know, Corey was his sounding board, if you will.
Right. And well, and that's, thank God they have each other so they can talk about this too.
So what exactly was this fetish that Mark was involved in? And what, if anything, do we know about the psychology behind it? Coprophilia is a type of paraphilia in which a person experiences intense sexual pleasure from feces. In the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM-IV, it is classified under PNOS, paraphilia not otherwise specified, along with other paraphilias such as necrophilia, zoophilia, and klismophilia, which is a fetish of enemas. As with all paraphilias in the PNOS category, diagnosis is only made if the behavior, sexual urges, or fantasies cause clinically significant distress or impairment in social, occupational, or other important areas of functioning. Surprisingly, little scientific research has been carried out on coprophilia, probably because it is so rare. There are certainly pornographic films that include sexual defecation acts, perhaps most notably the viral clip that got passed around in the 2000s, known as Two Girls, One Cup. In some of these films, coprophiliacs engage in coprophagia, which is the act of eating feces, and referred to more commonly as scat, which carries a significant health risk in the form of hepatitis. The psychiatrist Dr. Charles Lake notes that both coprophilia and coprophagia are traditionally considered characteristics of schizophrenia. However, there are case reports in the literature of non-psychotic coprophiliacs with normal intelligence, such as the one published in the Journal of Sex and Marital Therapy in 1995. Perhaps the most infamous alleged coprophiliac was none other than Adolf Hitler. This was alluded to in the 2011 biography of Hitler's lover, Eva Braun. However, other books on Hitler have been more detailed. For instance, the book, The Mind of Adolf Hitler, The Secret Wartime Report, which was originally prepared in 1943 for the U.S. Office of Strategic Services, known in that office as the Hitler Source Book. Quote, "We may regard Hitler's perversion as a compromise between psychotic tendencies to eat feces and drink urine on the one hand, and to live a normal, socially adjusted life on the other. The compromise is not, however, satisfactory to either side of his nature, and the struggle between these two diverse tendencies continues to rage unconsciously. We must not suppose that Hitler gratifies his strange perversion frequently. Patients of this type rarely do. And in Hitler's case, it is highly probable that he had permitted himself to go this far only with his half-niece Gelly and possibly one other. The practice of this perversion represents an extreme form of masochistic degradation." It is interesting to note that the previously mentioned half-niece of Hitler, Angela Marie Gelly Rubel, was also found dead at the young age of 23. The circumstances surrounding her death still remain shrouded in mystery, with Hitler claiming she committed suicide with one of his pistols. There doesn't seem to be any consensus as to the origin of these highly unusual paraphilias, and although, as with most paraphilic behavior, operant and classical conditioning would appear to play a major role. Whatever the origin, it is evident that compared to many other paraphilic behaviors, there is a severe lacking of empirical and clinical data related to the acquisition, development, and maintenance of this particular fetish. The pictures that Dylan discovered of his father would be naturally disturbing to most any adult, let alone child. I'm not one to engage in needless kink shaming, but obviously engaging in extreme sexual fetishes comes with an increased risk. In my mind, what makes this story all the more tragic is that by all accounts, Mark and Dylan seem to have had a pretty good relationship before Dylan discovered the pictures. Sure, Mark was not a perfect father. His job as a long-distance trucker made it a challenge for him to maintain a strong presence in Dylan's life. Yet for 13 years, it sounds like he made it work. I cannot imagine the horror that must have beset Dylan that summer when he discovered those pictures while on vacation. On some level, I wish that I could say I could empathize with Dylan and that I can put myself in his shoes, but I simply don't. I cannot understand how he feels. I cannot put myself in his shoes because I cannot imagine finding those kinds of pictures of my father. And yet, those pictures alone needn't have led us to where we are today. Instead, it seems that Mark not only had a sexual problem, but also had a drinking problem and an anger problem. And when you mix booze, sex, and rage, you create a toxic and deadly cocktail.
Coming up on Tapes from the Dark Side.
So you said that Dylan had been known for hitchhiking before, right?
We were coming up from the library to go to one of our friends' houses, and we were joking around about hitchhiking. And there Dylan is, he's still known.
You're listening to Tapes from the Dark Side. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break. If you prefer an ad-free experience, then join us on Patreon. For about the cost of one coffee a month, $3, you get access to our premium feed, featuring every episode ad-free in the highest quality audio, 300 kbps versus 192 on the standard feed, one day early access to all releases, plus bonus episodes and more. Sign up is quick and easy, and you can cancel anytime. Pause the show right now. Go to patreon.com/tapesfromthedarkside and get instant access to our premium feed. Thank you so much for your support. That's it. Back to the show.
The Dark Side.
I wanted to go sit down at a restaurant and eat, and he wanted to go to McDonald's. So as it turned out, he got what he wanted. We went to McDonald's. We got it through the drive-thru, and we ate it on our way back to the house here.
When you say he got what he wanted, I sense maybe a bit of, like, irritation. You really didn't want to go to McDonald's, or no, it didn't matter to you?
I didn't really want to go to McDonald's, no. But, you know, it wasn't something that was worth fighting with him over by any means. Mm-hmm. So it was easier for me to give him what he wants, which is typically what I do the majority of the time, because it's very difficult for me to tell him no, given the fact that I travel as much as I do and I don't spend as much time with him as I would like to be able to do. And so, you know, something I've learned over time is you kind of got to pick your battles, and that's certainly not a battle that I'm willing to pick.
So now we know that Dylan, let's kind of review this for a moment. We're talking with Elaine Redwine, whose son Dylan has been missing since November 2012. The boy's father was the last one to see him. He was at a court-ordered visitation, and Mark Redwine has refused all communication attempts with Elaine and his son Corey. Basically refused to do much to help find Dylan at all, won't talk to them, won't tell them anything. And we have discovered that Corey and Dylan both saw some very disturbing pictures of Mark about 2 years ago. I'm only going to say this one more time because there's no need to go over it, dressed in a diaper, eating his own feces and such. And now we find out that he went to Corey at his last visitation, which was Labor Day, and said that he had talked to his father about these pictures. Now, let's fast forward to November 2012 on his next court-ordered visitation. Why do you think, Elaine, that those pictures may have something to do with Dylan's disappearance?
I think it's a culmination of everything. I think that, you know, the pictures are just proof at, you know, Mark's change in behavior over the last couple of years. I think there's far more to it than just that. But I really think that, you know, his behavior, his personality has just
How
just,
has it changed? Can you give us some examples?
It's just he was never a very attentive father, but because of the divorce, I think that he was so focused on just, making sure no one else is happy. And I know that sounds juvenile, but I think he was so focused on making everybody else miserable because he was living, a very lonely, miserable kind of existence. And I think that, he just started, just really distancing himself from, in some aspects, reality. I wonder oftentimes if he even knows what reality is anymore. And it really disturbs me to see how far down he's gotten, especially, really witnessing it since Dylan's been missing.
One of the things that he had asked me was, could he go to his friend's house? Well, it's Sunday night. It's 7:30, 8 o'clock by that time. I personally don't feel like it's appropriate to spend time at your friend's house, given the fact that it's Sunday night and it's getting later in the evening. And so I told him that I didn't think that was necessary. So I'm assuming, based on the things that have come out, that the conversation with Dylan and his friends had everything to do with Dylan making plans to be able to get with his friends as early as possible the next day.
Did it strike you as strange that there was nothing at his dad's house?
Well, yeah. I mean, for him to just take off walking or be abducted or whatever, it's like with a backpack, and then to find nothing up in that area, not a sock, not anything that belonged to Dylan, very strange.
Okay, so you were going to drop him off at his friend's house, was the plan, in
absolutely,
the morning. And,
absolutely.
And
well,
what time was that?
Drop him off. Well, I got up, I'm going to say somewhere around 5:30 or so, made coffee, sat around, tried to make as much noise as I can to kind of gently stir Dylan and wake him up and get him moving in the right direction. And, as 6:30 rolled around, which was the target time for me to leave to go take care of my business, Dylan isn't responding to any of that. So, I'm hollering his name, I'm whistling, doing all the things that I would normally do when I'm trying to get him awake. I do it in a gentle manner. I'm not going to go startle him by any means and have him wake up and be all alarmed. So I spent probably 35, 45 minutes, maybe even close to an hour, trying to get his attention, and I couldn't get through to him. And I wasn't surprised by that necessarily, because part of the conversation that we had was that he had been up till 4 o'clock in the morning with his friends the night before, and then he had spent the majority of the day in the airports traveling to get to Durango. So I didn't find it at all odd that he was so tired that it was difficult for him to want to wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
Did that irritate you at all? Did that make you frustrated, or you were just, hey, it's just typical kid type stuff?
No, it's typical kid type stuff. This is the same thing that he and I go through every time he spends time with me. And, where he's hard to get to sleep and hard to get up, I tend to be the opposite. I go to bed earlier, I get up earlier, and I'll pace around the floor, I'll turn the music on, I'll holler his name, I'll get something cooking on the stove. And, he wakes up when he's ready to wake up. This is the way it's always been with he and I.
And so do you think that there's a possibility that he thought he was going to get a ride from somebody, or he went out there looking for somebody to give him a lift down to Bayfield?
Well, he would have texted. He would have called. He would have used his phone after 8 o'clock or 8:30 at night. I mean, he wouldn't have just started walking. I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but that area is very isolated. And Dylan, it was not that energetic to just start walking down that road and hope he catches a ride. He would have texted. He would have texted me and said, you know, because I have many friends down there. And, you know, he knows that they would have come and got him or whatever the case may be. I mean, I don't believe. And we checked that whole entire road for footprints of Dylan's, you know, just to see if there were any, because he had very distinctive shoe markings on the on his soles. And there was no footprints of his. And it just is very curious to me because, you know, I know Dylan. I know Dylan better than anyone other than maybe his brother. And I know he would have texted or called, you know, and let either myself or his friends know, you know, what his plans were. He wouldn't just go walking down that road.
So do you think something happened Sunday night or Monday?
You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough question for me to answer. I know I didn't hear from him after Sunday night, and, you know, that just makes me wonder when this really happened.
I agree with Elaine that it sounds strange that Dylan would take off walking to his friend's house, who lives 6 miles away, without texting someone. At the same time, I think the question we need to ask is, even though it certainly would have been out of character for Dylan, is it even a possibility? Can we say beyond a reasonable doubt that Dylan would have texted his friend, or somebody, anybody, before leaving for Ryan Nava's house? In my opinion, on this question hangs Mark Redwine's only conceivable defense. Because if Dylan was alive on the morning of November 19th,
then that would mean that Mark didn't murder him the night prior.
Elaine claims that Dylan would have certainly called someone for a ride, which makes sense. I have trouble imagining a 13-year-old boy planning to walk 6 miles in the freezing cold at 7 a.m. in the morning.
Yet one possibility that, in my opinion, has not been thoroughly exhausted is, could Dylan have set off on foot to his friend Ryan Nava's house with the intention of hitching a ride along the way?
They lived on mostly back roads, but 7 a.m. would have been around the time people would be headed to work. November 19th was a Monday, and it was 4 days before Thanksgiving, so there would have likely been most of the normal morning work traffic on the roads. Is it possible that someone could have snatched Dylan while he was trying to hitch a ride? Well, before we even consider this possibility, it would help if we had some kind of evidence that showed that Dylan had hitchhiked in the past. In my research, I found a YouTube channel of one of Elaine's friends, and she posted a few videos that were recorded during the searches for Dylan that occurred in November and December of 2012. One of these videos features Ryan Nava, who was one of Dylan's best friends, and is actually the friend he was planning to meet up with the day he went missing. I apologize in advance for the audio quality. The non-diegetic music playing in the background was edited into the original video, and I couldn't remove it.
Yep, both of you guys. Okay, so what's your names?
Ryan Nava.
Wesley Herring.
And you guys are friends of Dylan's, right?
Yeah.
Right. And Ryan, you were the last person to talk to Dylan on Sunday night, right?
Yes.
And so tell me what was going on. You guys were just texting and...
He sounded really excited to come over. He was actually supposed to stay the night, but... decided not to for some reason, I don't know why.
We now know the reason that Dylan did not stay the night at Ryan's house was because Mark wanted him home for his first night in town.
So you said that Dylan had been known for hitchhiking before, right? How many times did you know that he had done that?
He done it, how many times? Like, did it once that I saw.
So it wasn't something he did all the time?
No.
Well, it was snowing, and we were coming up from the library to go to one of our friends' houses. And we were joking around about hitchhiking, and Dylan is still
known. It's kind of hard to hear in that clip, but he said, "We were joking around about hitchhiking, and there Dylan is with his thumb out."
But did you guys really get a ride?
Yeah.
You did. Yeah, so most of the time it's probably okay. So he is doing that.
So you think that in the morning, though, when he got up, he would recharge his phone?
They got a hold of one of us.
Right, for a ride. Yeah, exactly. All right, cool.
All right, so let's review that last part. There are pieces in there that even after listening multiple times, I could not decipher. But the parts that I could understand, the adult woman says, "But did you guys really get a ride?" Ryan says, "Yeah." The adult says, "You did." Then we hear something inaudible from the kids that I could not make out, even after listening about a dozen times. So then the adult says, "So most of the time it's probably okay." So he is known for doing that sometimes then. So you think in the morning when he got up, he would have charged his phone or would have recharged his phone. Then one or both the kids says, "Yeah, me too." And then Ryan says he would have got a hold of one of us. And then she says, "Right, for a ride. Yeah, exactly. All right, cool."
So let me ask you this, you know, obviously they've given you a polygraph, they've looked at your phones. In a case like this, they have to look at the parents.
Absolutely, as they should.
So I have to ask this, did you have anything whatsoever to do with Dylan's disappearance?
You know, I wish I did, because then he'd be home. I mean, I wish I could relive that day and do things a lot differently. I had absolutely nothing to do with Dylan's disappearance.
What would you say to that person, whoever took Dylan?
Be smart, you know. There's many ways that you can just, you know, anonymous tips. There's a lot of things that you can do at this point. All we want is Dylan home. That's all we want. That's all we've ever wanted. And we will do whatever we have to do. We're not gonna stop. We're not gonna back down. We're not gonna forget about him. We're not just gonna roll over and pretend like this never happened. We are all collectively, as a community, as a nation, we are all going to find Dylan, and we are all going to bring him home.
Then you think he's still alive?
Oh, I have to hope for Dylan. I mean, I'm his mom. I can't even. I can't focus. There's no reason to believe he's not, and so I will always hope for Dylan.
While police may not have a suspect, others in the Redwine family are pointing fingers.
I want people such as Mark to speak with us, and so we can figure out, you know, where we need to go at this point.
Outside Dylan's father's home, people, including Dylan's older brother, Corey,
thanks for coming out,
are demanding answers, believing Mark Redwine knows more than he's sharing.
He was the last person to see him, and he's not, you know, helping out with, you know, giving us answers that we have questions to.
While Mark Redwine has remained mostly private since his son's disappearance, we spoke with him about the allegations being made against him in an exclusive interview last November.
There have been some people pointing fingers.
I know.
What would you say to those people?
God love them. God's got to love everybody. My focus right now is focusing on Dylan and what he needs from us to help find him.
All this time later, Mark Gredwein says his ex-wife has turned the search for Dylan into a witch hunt against him.
He's just been very evasive.
A hunt Mark says he wants nothing to do with.
This is not a gossip. This is not rumor. This is my son.
For her part, Elaine Redwine says she just wants answers. Answers that'll end a nearly three-month-long nightmare and bring the now 14-year-old back where he belongs.
I want to go to Dylan's mother, Elaine Redwine, joining us from Durango, Colorado tonight. I know that your family has joined together and are doing everything humanly possible to find Dylan. I mean, this is a boy that has never been in any trouble before, is loved by his family, by his friends, everybody. He's just the sweet kid every mom dreams of having. Miss Redwine, what is your message tonight?
For anyone who has seen Dylan, somebody knows where he is, please help us find Dylan. He is, as you say, Nancy, scrubbed in sunshine, and he is a huge missing link in our family. We know somebody knows where he is. Please come forward.
Elaine, you have taken and passed a police polygraph. Is that correct?
Yes.
What do you know about the father's polygraph?
You know, I don't know much. I know that, you know, everyone is encouraging him to take that, so hopefully he will do that soon so we can get him out of the picture and, you know, focus on where Dylan is.
Is it your understanding that he's failed a polygraph?
No, I don't think he failed a polygraph. I don't know the specifics behind that. I don't think he necessarily failed, but you know, I don't have any information on that, so it's real tough for me to answer that question.
Elaine, when you were speaking earlier to our producers, you mentioned that it was your understanding that he had failed a polygraph.
No, I didn't say he had failed a polygraph.
Okay, good. I'm glad you can clarify that. So what is your understanding then?
I think it was inconclusive.
Is he being asked to take another?
I believe so, yes, he is.
Have you had a hard time getting information out of the father?
Well, you know, I've tried reaching out to him. You know, we've texted. He's just not been, we just haven't worked together very well through all this. And like I said, I've really tried to reach out to him. But people react differently, I guess.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you know, I just want to find my son. I mean, right now that is my primary focus, and we need to get over anything that has occurred. We just need to find our son. And, you know, unfortunately for Mark, he was the last person to see Dylan. So all the questions are going to come back to him, and he needs to, you know, try and understand what people are going through, what we're going through, what Dylan's brother is going through, and help us find Dylan.
There are disturbing photos of him just doing unthinkable acts.
Prosecutors point to lewd and disgusting photos as an explanation for something no parent could ever imagine doing. Tonight, only on Denver 7, you'll hear from the only other person to see those graphic images, his brother Corey. Compromising photos that Dylan and his older brother Corey had seen. Only Denver 7's Jacqueline Allen spoke with Corey tonight, who explains in graphic detail what those photos show and what Dylan planned to do.
He's just a sick person, and he's fine with being that person.
From the very beginning, Corey Redwine has been convinced his own father killed his little brother.
We didn't know what the outcome would be, but we've always known that Mark was in some way, shape, or form involved in this.
Have you seen the photos?
I've seen them.
Corey says the photos involve Mark eating his own feces, but Corey believes those photos were just the beginning of a confrontation.
I think Dylan had a lot more than just pictures that he wanted to get across to Mark.
Who wants justice for the brother he lost, but has also lost whatever relationship he might have had with his father.
I'm sad that I've ever had to go through this, that Dylan had to go through this, and that, you know, all of this past 5 years is just, you know, been about who killed Dylan when it should have never happened in the first place. It's exciting to know that justice is coming for my little brother.
Jacqueline Allen, Denver 7.
Coming up next week on Tapes from the Dark Side, the Dylan Redwine Saga.
I know that I don't have Dylan. Where is Dylan?
I don't have Dylan.
You know where Dylan is, Mark. You were the last one to see him. You were the last one to have any contact with him. He was on your watch.
Stay tuned till after the credits for a promo from a true crime podcast called The Prosecutors. It's quickly becoming one of the top podcasts in the country. Look them up and subscribe today. That is The Prosecutors. If you want to experience the show in glorious full HD audio and 100% ad-free, then join us on Patreon. Get instant access to the Tapes from the Dark Side premium feed, 100% ad-free, 320 kilobytes per second versus the standard 192, 1 day early access to all episodes, exclusive bonus episodes, and you can also get merch discounts up to 30% off, our Tapes from the Dark Side exclusive sticker pack, entry into our giveaway drawings, plus your name read aloud in the credits of the show. Join today for less than the cost of one coffee a month, $3. It takes less than a minute to sign up, and you can cancel anytime. Patreon.com/tapesfromthedarkside, or just click the link in the episode show notes. Go sign up right now. Thank you so much to 2600 for allowing us to use his music for our show theme. If you like the music you are hearing right now, go check out his album, The Cold Rise from Sleep. He is on Spotify and Bandcamp and YouTube. That is 2600-20-SIX-100. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.
Dylan knew about his dad. His dad was a deviant, and Dylan had found some pictures, and his brother Corey found horrible pictures of their father, and this has been confirmed, of him dressed as a baby, diaper, bonnet, little pacifier, and eating his own feces. That is about as twisted as you can get. Now, I was just reading an article today that where Corey Redwine, that's his brother, was quoted as saying that Dylan was going to confront him about these pictures because he was so disturbed by them. So Dylan doesn't want to go. He's getting ready to confront his dad. I mean, those pictures are something obviously Mark Redwine did not want to get out there. So you can just imagine his rage if Dylan actually did bring up these photos and say, Dad, you're a pervert, I can't stand you, right there. I think right there you can just see an explosive encounter happening very easily.
You're right. What Trisha is referring to is that Dylan had been using his father's laptop and had stumbled across these photographs. It's multiple photographs of his father that have been described by people that have viewed those photographs as cross-dressing, dressing as a woman, dressing up in a diaper, and eating feces. And there has been one photograph that has floated across the internet of Mark Redwine, Dylan's father. And again, if you have children in the room, probably best to not allow them to hear this, but he is wearing a bonnet like babies used to wear back in the day, and he has a pacifier in his mouth, and there is something that resembles feces coming out of his mouth. And Mark Redwine's defense of that is that it was chocolate and that this was a Halloween costume. Now, I don't know what kind of Halloween costume that is. I've never heard of that Halloween costume. Have you,
yeah,
Trisha?
Never. I have not seen that one in Walmart, no. The adult baby diaper sucking on your pacifier with feces costume just doesn't seem to be a big seller. Another thing he said, too, and this was early on, He said that he photoshopped that picture because he wanted to catch his boys. He knew that they were going into his and using his computer when they weren't supposed to. So he photoshopped that picture so they would admit being on his computer. I mean, the guy is just lie after lie after lie.
That seems to be really, if you, that just, that's so strange that you're going to.
It is.
Who thinks about that? I'm going to photoshop a picture of me dressed like a baby with feces running out of my mouth.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah, so he, but see, he thinks he's smarter than anybody else.
I'm Brett.
And I'm Alice.
And together, we host a true crime podcast called The Prosecutors.
Every week, we bring our perspective as prosecutors to some of the toughest cold cases of all time.
Disappearances, murder, mayhem, you name it, we'll cover it.
So join us for a true crime podcast with a different point of view.
Because we are The Prosecutors.
A dark side. Yes, God.